So I was in South Africa and I literally, like, I went into my bank account and it was like negative. So, oh my God, what happened?
If the weight of uncertainty when it comes to your design business finances is keeping you up at night, this podcast episode is for you. Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, we welcome Lisa Gilmore, principal designer and owner of Lisa Gilmore Design, based in St. Petersburg, Florida. In this episode, Lisa shares her fast-track journey to design business ownership and a life-defining moment that stopped her in her tracks and prompted a complete makeover of her finances. We also discuss how she embraced the concept of profit first and the impact it had on her business, her team, and her confidence. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them that you heard about it on Design Biz Survival Guide. Hey everyone, will you be joining us in Palm Springs this fall for Design Biz Retreat? This exclusive gathering of design visionaries and industry experts combines the business of design and the value of community to deliver a two-day experience you don't want to miss. Visit our website for all the details and bios on our featured speakers, including Michelle Lynn, Kelly Lamb, Christopher Kennedy, Michael Walters, Amy Monroe, and Kate the Socialite. This opportunity is limited to 24 design professionals and only a few seats remain, so register now and be a part of the design community's most anticipated business and personal development event of the year. Now let's dive into our conversation with Lisa Gilmore.
Well, I'm glad to have you on the podcast and I'm excited to share kind of your journey. But before we dig into the business of design, I'd like to kind of learn a little bit about you. And so tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell the listeners about yourself, who you are, who is Lisa.
Awesome. Yeah. So, I'm Lisa Gilmore and I'm the principal owner and designer of, principal designer and owner of Lisa Gilmore Design here in St. Petersburg. And we're a team of four, including myself. This December will be my 10th year in business, which is crazy to think about. And I've been in the industry now for 16 years. And I started really young and just jumped into it. And it's luckily been working out.
Well, we're going to talk about that a little bit. That's awesome. Lisa, did you go to design school? Like, how did you kind of stumble into the business of design like so many of us did?
I did. Yeah. So I'm only 35 now, which feels old, but also young. and so I was really fortunate to be one of the rare people in my life anyway, that I know that knew exactly what they were going to go to school for and stuck with it and didn't, you know, change majors a million times, which there's nothing wrong with that. From what I'm learning, it's not a very common thing. And so I was in high school and like many of us discovered HGTV. And so I was, you know, a 17-year-old kid and Lakeland, Florida, which is a very small rural town. Staying up later than my parents probably realized, watching Candace Olsen, Divine Design. And I was just mesmerized by, I guess, her approach to design, because it was like a very artistic approach, and she would do the sketches and she would, you know, have her, all her materials laid out and everything like that. And then she walked through the construction. So that was like really my first real, I guess, insight to the industry. And I grew up in a very artsy family, and I always knew I wanted to do something artistic, but I didn't really know what that was going to be. I for the longest time thought I'd probably be like an art teacher or something, but I don't have the patience for that. So I went into design school straight out of high school, and I fast tracked through it, and I got a job while I was in school, moved to Chicago when I was 23, worked for a great designer there, and then moved back to Florida, relocated to the Tampa Bay area, and launched my company when I was 25. And it was kind of crazy, you know, but that's how I got here.
So you really hit the ground running. You started your business at a very young age, which I think a lot of designers can totally relate to. What were some of the pain points associated with, you know, starting your business at a young age, you know, and how did you overcome them?
I think because, like, as designers, and I'm sure other fields are like this, but obviously all I know is design. So I think for designers with business, it's such different parts of your brain that you're using, you know, your business brain, your finance brain, your money brain, your marketing brain, and then your actual design brain and dealing with clients and client relationships. And so, you know, I was pretty young, and so I was still developing my designer brain at that time, you know, and I was still finding my designer voice. And also myself, because I was still young, you know, I mean, you're in your early 20s, you're still learning your voice and everything like that. And so I think one of my biggest challenges was learning to know and standing up for yourself. And then really fully understanding that even though I'm incredibly passionate about design and people acknowledge it and hire me for it, it's beyond that. And I needed to hone in on the business side, but I was scared because I didn't have training in that. So I just stuck my head in the sand for a very long time. You know, at least the first 6-7 years of my business, I kept it saying, like, I was like chasing the next sofa sale because I didn't fully understand the business side and the financial side and how much to save for your taxes and, you know, all these things that go into it. So if I could go back to 25-year-old Lisa, it would be learn the power of no, stand in your space stronger than you were, and really dig into the financial business side, even though you're scared.
Yeah, I think that those are two critical components of the business of design. And I wish, I want to create a college course about boundaries and client expectations. And I would love to expand upon the business course that I know most design programs, they do offer kind of a general business course to help you understand the general way that the design business works, but it's the complexities that are so important to understand. And unless you've worked at another design firm, or unless you have a really strong relationship with a tight network of fellow designers who can share that information with you, it really is kind of trial and error. And that can be very scary and it can be very expensive.
100%. Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, I worked for some smaller boutique design firms, which was huge in my experience because it was so hands-on. And I did learn a lot of, you know, real life design things that, again, you don't learn in school. And I took some of their business practices and like the way they organize their files, you know, and then made it my own. But even them, I see, you know, and again, I don't know if it's like a difference in, you know, time and things like that, but like their business, like speaking wasn't that strong, you know? And so it's like, I often wonder if it's just like the way things are changing for our design industry, because it's become such a hot thing now for designers to have a profitable business, you know what I mean? And I think for a while there, we got like caught in this awful stereotype of like, oh, designers get trade discounts and they'll give you a discount and you'll get a sofa, you know? And it's like, how did that happen to us? Like, how did we become bargain discount people? Like, what happened?
Yeah. And I think if you would have asked anybody 10 or 15 or 20 years ago, they would have no idea like how we made money. They probably wondered what our other job was to support ourselves and pay our mortgage. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know, design always seemed like this fun hobby that people with extra time did. And I'm so glad that now people realize that it really is, you know, a legit career. But, you know, with that being said, you're right. The business of design has come a long way and it has become big business. And with that comes like big responsibility on a business level, especially when it comes to finances. Mm-hmm. You had a pretty serious aha moment midway through your design business career. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So it was a big aha moment for sure. You know, like I said, this December will be 10 years that I've had my business. And I can say that I'm very fortunate that my business did take off very strong. I positioned myself well in terms of networking and marketing. And I moved to this area at a very prime time because it was right when like Instagram was launching and stuff. You know, like there was a lot of movement happening. And I moved from Chicago and a lot of things in Florida were just that like very gray, white, blue, which there's nothing wrong with, but I couldn't find a design home. And so that's how my business started, was because it was kind of a selfish need to keep my creativity full. And so that's how my business started. And so then I always just kind of was just, because my student loan debt was insane. I, you know, was trying to pay my bills, all those things, like all of us. And so I was just taking on job after job after job and not paying attention to the business, the finance side. And as we all know, I mean, there's so many things that come in and out of our business. You know, we have our design time, we have cost of sofas and the fabric, and then we have the wallpaper installer, we have the lights, and like, you know, so it's like, so much money runs through us that has to go to so many different places that it's really easy to get it confused and not fully understand what's yours, how much you need to save for taxes and all these things. And so that was happening. And it was just like a slippery slope because I just kept, like I said, chasing the next sofa sale and getting by. And like, I was never like in real like financial trouble in terms of like, all my client stuff was always paid for. You know what I mean? It was always me personally that was suffering and never anyone else. And so then fast forward and it was 2017 and I was getting divorced and I thought I was this independent financial boss babe, you know, and I was not. I was not. And I came crashing hard. And so I was spending money that I didn't know if it was mine or not. I was doing this whole like eat, pray, love thing, trying to find my personal self and keep my creative flowing. And so I was like traveling and it was just a mess. And I was in South Africa and it was just like a perfect storm of things that went wrong. And I was literally at rock bottom. And what it was I had a client who had a return check for like a sofa or something that we had given them a check for. It was like $14,000. And he waited 3 months to cash it. But because I was not on top of my finances, I didn't keep track of that. So I wrote the check, it was gone. We had another client's check bounced that I had already ordered product off of. Something else happened. I can't remember what it was, but it was literally like a perfect storm of so many things that went wrong that were all not necessarily my fault, but it was my fault for not being in tune with my books, you know, because I could have caught it. And so I was in South Africa and I literally, like, I went into my bank account and it was like negative. I was like, oh my God, what happened? What, what's going on? And so I'm in South Africa and I had to call my mom and ask her to pay my rent for my personal apartment because I was just like strapped. And that was like my big wake up moment. And I went to my friend's house, who's great. She's also my attorney and she's great at financial stuff. And she introduced me to Profit First, which is, you know, the whole money management system. And that literally changed my life. Like that whole system changed my life because I'm such a visual person too. And I think that's a huge issue with designers. I hate to use the word issue because it doesn't have to be, but it's hard for us to change our brains from that creative to the business. And so for me with Profit First, you're like, I was visually allocating this money and putting it into the accounts that they meant to be. And it literally changed my life. I was like, oh my gosh, this is it. So I have a tax account and I'm putting 15% in there and, you know, all those things. And thank goodness we are in a lucrative industry. And I was able to turn it around very, very quickly. I buckled down and got things going and I brought my business. I was doing like 850,000 in revenue. And in a year we went to 2.25 million and everything was accounted for. My taxes were ready to be paid. I was making money. It was the first time in my life I was actually like making money for myself. And I was like, not embarrassed in my tax return. they say like the best happens from the bottom because there's nowhere to go but up from there. And it was scary, but I'm thankful for it.
That's an incredible story. And what's even more incredible is your willingness to share it, because I really think that so many people can relate to that story and not enough people talk about it. We've all been in precarious situations with our finances. And you're right, the business of design is very lucrative and hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars funnel through our business on an annual basis. And you really have to have a handle on that. And if you don't, it can get out of control really, really fast.
And honestly, like this might annoy some people what I'm about to say, but it's the truth. If you're a designer and you're really struggling financially, it's probably your fault because we are in such a lucrative business and you have the opportunity to make money on your time and services and product. There's really no excuse for you to be struggling financially. It's likely your fault because you're not paying attention. You're not looking at your margins and your operating expenses are too high for the volume you're at. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. There's solutions to everything financially. You just really have to look at it. You need to kind of evaluate it. And then you have to make changes and you have to stick to them. You know, if you're not making enough money, you need to increase your prices and you need to enforce those rates. You need to enforce your boundaries. You need to do all of the things that you're seeing that need improvement. You know, you actually have to commit to it and do it. And that's the other half of the battle. Understanding it is the first half, identifying it, and then actually implementing it is probably the most challenging part, you know?
For sure. And I'm definitely one of those people, like, so for me, I really had to hone in on my personal weaknesses, which is procrastination, sticking my head in the sand if I don't understand something, purposely, distracting myself with things that I enjoy more. So I had to like really acknowledge those weaknesses and write it in on my schedule. You know, this on Fridays, you're doing this every Friday, every morning, you wake up, you check your email, you check your finance, you do your things, you know, and every Friday you do your routine. And like you said, understanding your profit margin, understanding your value and enforcing it and not being apologetic about it. Or am I saying that right? You shouldn't have to apologize for what your value is, you know?
Absolutely. You own it 100%. You know, I'm glad that you embrace the Profit First kind of program. It's very popular in our industry. I know a lot of designers who swear by the book. They utilize a lot of the things that they've learned from the book, from the concept. But there's also a big part of our design community that has never even heard of the concept, which kind of floors me. So can you break the concept down for us just very simply and how it helped you?
Yeah, and truly the reason why I think it is so popular for our industry is because we're visual. You know, we're not spreadsheet people by most of us anyways. We're not, our brain doesn't operate that way, especially mine. And so essentially what it is the whole theory behind it is to pay yourself and to make a profit. And I think that that is, and not just designers, a lot of entrepreneurs make the mistake of paying everyone else before themselves, or, oh, the business, and I'm not going to take any money. But that's not true. Like, there's a reason why we're doing this, like, to make a living. And so the whole idea behind it is to pay yourself. And so essentially what you do is you look at your business and you have five categories and 5% different percentages of your business, what it's supposed to be. And that also is a little bit challenging for people, I think, at the beginning. And I recommend, if you aren't savvy in finances, finding someone that you trust and you can be vulnerable with, because that's the other thing too, is like acknowledging when you aren't good at it and knowing when to call in people. And you have to be vulnerable. You have to be honest, you know, or you're not going to get anywhere. And so you have these five categories. And so there's the, from me personally, you have cost of goods, operating expenses, cost of goods, meaning like your sofas, your wallpaper and stuff that you're buying for your clients, your operating expenses. So your office rent, your payroll, your insurance, your, oh my gosh, I'm totally drawing a blank now. Operating expenses, cost of goods, tax account. That's a big one. You put your taxes in it all the time. And that just sits there. And then you have your profit account and your owner's pay account. And so I can't remember off the top of my head what the ideal numbers, but they do have suggestions in the book for your, what your goal should be. But again, it's not always going to shake out initially because your operating expenses might be really high, like mine were. And so then you kind of have to like wean them a little bit and move forward. And so essentially what you do, like for me, I have what I call a main deposit account. And so my main deposit, so every time a client pays for our services, pays for product, it goes into this main deposit funnel account. And then every week on Friday, my finance Fridays, I divvy it up. And so I have my operating expenses, that my percentage for the team and like everything I have, then my cost of goods, put 15% for taxes, I pay myself, and we have a profit. And so that's essentially how it works. And it's really great because like you can visually see the accounts growing and stuff. I will say the first three-ish months are painful because you're looking at this and like, wait, I don't make that much money. How can I put money in a tax account and a profit account? And you want to rob Peter to pay Paul from the other account, but you can't because that defeats the purpose. So the first 3 months are really shaky and you really aren't sure about what you're doing. But once you get through that 3 months, and if you are strict on your boundaries and your pricing, you'll be 3-4 months, you'll be like, oh my gosh, where has this been my entire life?
I love the concept so much because you're right. It is very visual. I like to say that it's a way of organizing your money. We're very organized people by nature. Our studios are very organized. Our presentations are very organized. Our methodology when we're designing is very structured and organized. And so being able to apply finances in the same way, I think, is something that creatives can really relate to. So I call it like a way of organizing your money. And it is visual because just by looking at, you know, 3 to 5 different bank accounts, depending on how many you create to set up your own, you know, system, it's a very visual way to look at your cost of goods account and say, that's a really big number right now, but it's going to be very small once I order this project. So that one should either be really high or almost to nothing, because that tells me I'm done ordering a project and then I'll replenish it. So that one is kind of like a roller coaster, and the others should be increasing slowly and consistently. And if they're not, you can see visually that there's a problem.
Yeah. And it's really rewarding when you do start seeing them increase, you know, and like you said, if your operating expenses are like kind of getting low, you're like, ooh, why is this happening? Like, do I need to double check my team's time billing? You know, like it really makes you aware, because all those things should be covered all the time, you know? And to your point too, like about the cost of goods, like sometimes clients don't like to pay deposits on things. They prefer to pay 100%. And so you take that 100% and you put it there and it sits there until the sofa is done or whatever, and it's allocated and you don't have to worry about it. You know, it's so nice.
Right. And I like to be able to, I like to know if there's still, you know, $24,000 in that account and everything's ordered, what is that for? I need to know, oh, that's the other 50%, once everything's done. So we have it now, we're going to pay it in a couple of months, but that's what it's for. If it's sitting there, I need to know what it's for. I really do like the system a lot. And you know, you can't really evaluate all of those things when all of your money is mixed up in one bank account. It just looks like you have a ton of money.
Yeah, it's a cluster. It's literally a cluster, and it hurts my face.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. I mean, I know a lot of designers have learned this lesson just with sales tax alone is usually the blow that most designers take and realize, okay, we've got to get a little more organized. But this really kind of takes it to a next level. And I think it's a really great thing.
Yeah. And I will say that anyone listening, if they're thinking about doing it or anything like that, just know that your banker will think you're crazy. You will say, I'm going to open 6 bank accounts. I'm like, what? Trust me, I went through it twice because I was with a national brand and it wasn't a good fit. And so then I went to a local bank and they were like, never heard of this, but okay. You know, they do crazy, but who cares? If it works for you, it works for you.
Absolutely. That's a good bit of advice. Don't let your banker intimidate you. You do you. So let me ask you this, Lisa. Once you kind of, you know, got a handle on the finances and really were in a place where you knew where your business stood, you had an action plan to really keep things on point. How did that trickle down to like your team? How did things change? You know, what was that trickle down effect as far as like your team culture and your productivity and that sort of thing? Did it have an impact?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was pretty phenomenal, honestly, because, you know, so my longest employee, she's been with me, 6 years in December. So she really has seen the rise, the fall and the rise again, you know? And at the end of the day, your team is only as good as you are, you know, and as good of a leader as you can be. And that is one thing I think also people have to understand. And I have friends, I'm very close with design community people. And some people are at battle with the idea of like, do I need more staff? Is it just me? And I always tell people like, don't feel pressure to have a staff. Like maybe that's not your calling. Maybe you're not meant to be a leader. Maybe you are meant to be a solo designer that has a virtual assistant that helps you, or, and you only take on X amount of projects and it's your overhead and you can manage it. You know what I mean? So that's the biggest part, because it really does come from you and what you project, and your energy that you put out. So whenever I was going through my financial crisis, and I really started having to look at my bottom line. And I mean, I'm not exaggerating when I say I broke it down to the pencil sharpeners. I was just like, where is this money going? What's going on? Like this, we are bringing too much money in for me to feel this way, you know? And I wanted to make more money. I wanted my team to make more money, all the things. And the thing is, it's also not just about money. It's about just being comfortable, you know, and being proud and solid. And so I realized a couple things. One was, we were not accurately billing our time and there was a lot of undocumented time. So I really kind of micromanager about time with them. And I was checking timesheets every day, every week to really hone that in. And I had a pretty serious meeting with them. And I basically sat down with them and I was like, here's our profit and loss. Cause at the end of the day, your team sees how much money's coming. So they thought I was sitting on a gold mine, you know, and money's coming in. Here's how much you cost to sit at this table. You need to bill X percentage to still have a seat here. And it was a very, very eye-opening experience for them. And I'm really glad that I was vulnerable with them and explained that, because they definitely thought it was different. And so it's like, we have goals. So that also changed like our goals. So we had our time billing goals, we had revenue goals, you know, and the way my business is structured, I really focus high on the service side. And we charge a higher hourly rate. And then we do have margin on furniture, but I feel like I don't want to put all my eggs in a margin basket. And so I like having, you know, the time. So that was our biggest turnaround and how that happened. And they really, really started seeing that. And it really just taught us about time blocking. It taught us about at managing client expectations, builders' expectations, all the things. So when you really, and if you break down your time into how much you cost per second, it's pretty amazing. Like, it sounds crazy, but it's amazing when you really do that and you see the opportunities that are there when you start paying attention.
Right. It's amazing that you had that conversation with your staff. And I know it's a difficult conversation to have. And a lot of business owners don't really want to have that conversation. They don't want to talk about money and finances with their creative team. But you make a good point. At the end of the day, there's a cost associated with them sitting at that table. And if you want that seat at that table, you as an employee, as a team member, have a responsibility to produce, you know, and why not understand the numbers attached to that?
Yeah. And, you know, it actually kind of, it's funny because it's kind of like a flip-flop about educating the client about the design experience. Mm-hmm. People need to think about their team. Imagine like these kids, I hate to say kids, but people coming out of design school and they think it's going to be this glamorous, I'm going to be a designer. I'm going to be rich and I'm going to drive my Range Rover, you know, whatever. That's what they think. And they think because it's portrayed on like, you know, $1 million decorators and all these shows, but they don't realize the nitty gritty that goes into it. And so you almost have to educate your staff. I think it's our responsibility in terms of the design legacy and the design industry legacy to really educate our staff and the kids coming out of school and explaining that to them because if not, like, we're just creating a vicious cycle, you know?
Well, listen, Lisa, we've got some signature questions here on the podcast, and I feel like we've kind of covered most of them, but let's just see, maybe we can recap or maybe we can add, shed some additional light on them. The first one being, you know, what would you say is the secret to your success? You know, the secret to your survival in this business?
I think the secret to my success is I've always been authentic to myself, always been authentic to my voice, to my beliefs, to my style. I've allowed myself to evolve over time from, you know, being young to now in my mid-30s. And I think, you know, because like when people look at my portfolio, a lot of times they're like, oh my gosh, it's so colorful. It's so, you know, layered and you're so good at pattern. And that's how I dress every day. Like, that's just who I am. And so I think it's just people know what they're getting. And so I think that has been my success. I've never veered away to what people think I should be or what I should be delivering. And even at the beginning of my business, when I was looking for the clients that I have now that come to us for that uniqueness, I, you know, would have to do things that maybe weren't as creative, but I would like throw in that one crazy throw pillow and like they would eat it. I'm like, okay, they're nibbling on the dessert. And so then it's like the next one, I'm like, okay, they had a macaroon. So this, I'm going to try a whole pie here. And so then it just like kind of like kept building off of it. And so I was like getting my personal momentum. And now it's like, they want the whole dessert shop. And if I were to show them, you know, something from, I don't know, I hate to say use Restoration Hardware, but that's the only thing that comes to mind, they would probably be offended, you know, like, what are you showing me this for? This isn't what I hired you for. So, and that's how I got here, is because I stayed true to that, you know, and I just kept pushing and finding the little momentum in those small wins.
Love that. What would you say is the one thing you know now that you wish you knew then?
Business.
That was easy.
Finances, 1,000%. Like, I wish, you know, and this, it's one of those things that like, I knew deep down I wasn't doing it right. I knew I didn't understand, but I was not at a place where I felt comfortable even being vulnerable with myself to admit it, you know? And I wish that I would have gotten dirty, for lack of better words, with myself and owning my weaknesses and diving into those better.
Right. Right. And so how would you say that you pay it forward in the design community?
Doing stuff like this, you know, doing the podcast, and it's crazy how this all came about. Are you familiar with Luann Nagera, the building business? I am such a huge fan of her, and, you know, podcasts like hers, like yours. That's another thing too. Like, these things weren't around when I started my business. And I think if they would have been, my story could be completely different. You know, I don't know. And so it's so amazing that we have this, and we have this community and people like yourself and Luann and Business of Home who are activating for us to be a strong industry and career business people. Like, that is just, to me, it's amazing. Like, it's even hard to put that into words. So, but you know, I was at Luann's conference, I guess it was her first conference a few years ago. So I think it was 2018, 2019. I don't know. It must've been 2018. And we were talking about finances, and I don't know what came over me, but there was someone on the panel talking about finances, and she was talking about Profit First. She's certified in Profit First. And I just stood up in the middle of 300 people and shared my Africa story. And my friend who was with me, Jade, she's a fellow designer. She was like, "What are you doing? We didn't talk about this." And I was like, I don't know. I was like, this thing just came over me, and I had to share my story. And so people knew, like, what she was saying was true, and like what the possibility were. I'm like, no, I know this. I've done this, you know? And that was like such an out of body experience. Like, I still to this day have no idea what came over me. And that was just like a really powerful environment of people and that group. And I applaud Luann for what she put together. And I told my story. And after that, like, people were coming up to me at the conference crying, telling me, "Thank you for, I feel this way. I needed to hear that. Like, you, that just changed my whole perspective. I was about to just close my business doors." People were, and I was just like baffled by the response. And like, for a year, you know, like, people were emailing me, finding me, "How are you doing? What's going on?" And so then I was on Luann's podcast. And so it just really kind of like snowballed into this thing. And so now, like, I love it. And I love that my embarrassing, you know, aha crash is helping other people. And I just, even when I question myself, I'm like, why did I do that? That was so dumb. I just like totally exposed all my flaws and that I was a bad business owner. I remember, I'm like, nope, you're doing good. And it's okay. Like, you're helping other people, and it's just going to make the industry stronger.
Yeah. I mean, I think you sharing this story is the ultimate pay it forward. And I know it's hard to be that vulnerable and to tell that story, but you know, the reality is that was the past. And the story that we're really telling is the steps that you took to correct it and where you're at now. That's the real story. And, mm-hmm. and that's what's important. And sharing that story really is going to help so many people, because I guarantee, I know, there's so many people in that same position who just have to know that they're not alone. And, you know, there's some very basic, simple steps that you have to take and, mm-hmm. you know, to get back on course. And they're not the only one dealing with that drama, you know?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you. And I'm really glad that I allowed that to happen. And I allowed, because I think, you know, sometimes we make vanity choices, you know what I mean? Like, what looks good on the Instagram reel and all that stuff. And so I'm really glad that I allowed my vanity to step aside, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that you did too. And I'm glad that you were willing to share that story with us on the podcast. It's going to benefit a lot of design professionals. Lisa, how can the design community learn more about you? What is your website, and how can we find you on Instagram?
Yeah, so it's pretty simple. It's my name, lisagilmoredesign.com. And my Instagram handle is just at lisagilmoredesign. Very active on Instagram, not many other feeds. So we're always like doing stories and project updates, and the team's on there, so everyone can get to know my team and our work and everything.
Perfect. We'll put both links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Lisa, for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yes. Thank you for having me. This was amazing.
Well, I don't think I have to tell you that it takes a lot of courage to share a story like that. And I truly appreciate Lisa's willingness to speak candidly about the things that negatively impacted her business, and more importantly, about the measures that she took to correct the situation and turn the narrative into a story of growth and prosperity for her business. You know, when speaking to Lisa, I had my own aha moment when she began to describe the dialogue that she opened with her staff regarding the real cost of business and the responsibility and accountability of everyone on the team to produce and generate revenue. While this may not be an easy conversation to have, I believe it is one that benefits everyone. Empowering your team members with an understanding of how the business operates financially could result in a heightened awareness of their own productivity. It also demonstrates that you have a real grip on the state of your business's finances and profitability. Remember, your team comes to work to be led, not managed, and to learn something new every day. So go ahead and share the knowledge. It may very well be the lesson that saves their business someday. If you love this podcast episode, please share it with a friend or colleague. If you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to leave a review. That really helps boost our visibility on the platform to reach more design professionals just like you. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.